You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC. Thanks again for joining me on the KMC podcast. My name is Tom Bump, and it's a great day to be alive and to be serving the Lord. And I'm looking forward to this episode as we talk about leaders, leadership, and how to stay in ministry for the long haul, as well as how to handle some of the pressures that come with being in leadership, and also helping your volunteers process difficult situations. So we're going to hit a variety of topics, and my guest today is Tricia Peach, a good friend of mine. We've been friends for quite a while and hung out at conferences together, and Tricia's got a couple books, and she's working on a third one, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But Tricia, welcome to the KMC podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Pastor Tom. It's good to see you again.
Well, it's good to see you too. Well, like I said, we want to talk about one of the things that you're working on with this new book is about reasons leaders and volunteers leave ministry. And we've all heard the statistic that, even though I've probably not really seen it corroborated in real total scholarly research, but it's out there that, you know, it says that most youth workers, ministry people, stay on an average of 3 to 4 years of max. If that's the reality, what are some of the causes to why we're seeing such a short time with leaders sticking around?
Oh, I understand what you're saying, where they don't, I haven't really seen the research either to back that up, but it seems to be fluid that the numbers are changing, but not for the better, mm-hmm. from what I'm seeing and hearing. Now, when I was in Bible college, the statistic they gave us was that 4 out of 5. We're year 5. So that's 80%. So that means anybody out there that has made it past year 5 is definitely a veteran and in the minority. So we started thinking about, why is that? And in college, they taught us it was probably due to people taking out too many school loans and then not being able to pay them off. I immediately did not agree with that assessment, because if you went into kids ministry, family ministry, any ministry, thinking you were going to make great money, you had the wrong guidance counselor.
Right.
I just don't think it's money. I really don't. I think it, personally, I've been doing these surveys all across the country, all different denominations, and the key, I would say the common denominators have been, the number one, of course, fallout from poorly handled church conflict.
Mm-hmm.
People getting hurt, sometimes chewed up and spit out, for lack of a better phrase. That's kind of number one. Two would be unrealistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
They're expecting something that doesn't exist, and then it's a huge disappointment when they go in. I think a third major reason is, you know, we say burnout, but I would say so overworked that it ends up having a physical manifestation, where they're having physical problems and or depression, and fourthly, family issues. Their family begins to come apart at the seams, and that'll destroy your ministry too, and your family starts to unravel.
Yeah, it does. So let's take a look at some of these a little bit in depth and see if we can't offer to our listeners some solutions or some preventative medicine anyway, because you and I both have been in ministry a long time, and we've both coached and try to help people through these things. And in fact, one of the things that I want to say right off the get-go is, if you're listening to this podcast and you're going through a hard time right now, and maybe you're feeling alone out there, hey, reach out to Tricia or myself. We'll give you our contact info at the end of this episode. I know this is an area I've been through a lot of ups and downs. I've seen the ugly side of the church myself, and I've walked through a process, and I know you have too, and you've walked other people through. So that's something I want to say right out there, because I know that's your heartbeat. I know that's mine. And that's why we do, why I do this, and why I lead the KMC community group on Facebook and all of that, because I want to help people be connected. And one of the things that can make you feel really, really alone is when you're in conflict with a senior leader. So what can a kid ministry leader do if they're not in unity, or they're just in a situation of conflict with a senior leader? What's some advice you would give a leader?
Oh, it is, I would say you are not alone. Number one, you are not alone. I think the enemy tries to make you feel that it's just you, that you did something wrong to get in this position. It happens all the time. It's more common than you'd think. Also, you have to acknowledge that a problem with the senior leader is the worst case scenario, because if it is a problem between you and another staff person, you and one of the people that you work alongside of, you can get through that. As long as the senior leader has your back, you can get through anything. You can get through that. But if it's you and the senior leader, then you have a problem. Basically, if you get to a point that you cannot publicly 100% support the decisions made by the senior leader, then it needs to be you that goes, not waiting for him or her to leave. It's going to have to be you that unseat the senior leader, or out, you know, wait them out. I've heard some say, well, they're going to leave this year, they're going to leave next year, and then that doesn't happen.
Right.
You're hanging on, waiting right. for them to leave, and then it just doesn't happen. Thing I would say about that is you don't want to just stomp out the door without saying anything. That happens a lot too. I think we were relators. A lot of children's ministry leaders are relators. We don't like conflict, so we'll get upset or get hurt about something and then just quick resign and, oh, well, God's leading me on. I don't feel like that's fair, because you can say, well, the senior leader wouldn't listen to me. The senior leader wouldn't even make any changes. And then I'll ask them, so what did they say when you talked to them about it? Oh, well, I just knew they wouldn't. Well, that's not fair. I think for me, I'd say, okay, Trish, I don't want to do this. I don't want to confront. I don't want to have these conversations. But I didn't want to be sitting there at 80 years old and think, what if I had spoken up? What if I had just been honest and laid it out? So each time, and I've been at 4 full-time ministry positions over the last 20 years, and each time I've gone in and sat down with the senior leader and said, these are the issues that I'm seeing, and this one is unsustainable, meaning this is not one that I'm going to be able to stay if this doesn't get fixed. And I'm very honest, so this does not come out of the clear blue sky, because if the senior leader doesn't know you feel that way, and it's not right to say, well, they should just know how I feel. Come on now. We do that in marriage. We should speak up, lay it out. I'll have a laid out reason of why. A good example would be one ministry that I was working with was going great. We had quadruple as far as kids go. We had a lot more volunteers. And the senior pastor made a new decision that no one under the age of 21 could serve in kids ministry anymore, because he wanted them to be more loyal to youth ministry. And I felt so strongly that this was a terrible decision, because I mean, it was going to decimate our pre-K, because we had so many teenagers that were serving in pre-K and nursery on our worship team and kids ministry. I had college students that were running things for me that would all be cut out. And so I laid it out for the senior leader and said, I feel passionately about this. I was given a chance when I was 15. We need to involve these kids in ministry or we're going to lose them.
Right on.
He felt strongly the other way, but when I resigned, it was not a huge surprise. He knew that that was what was going to happen. I moved on to a different ministry. My father always said, know which altars you're willing to die on and make sure there's not many of them. Because you also don't want to go the other direction and say, these are my 1900 sacred cows, and if you touch them, I'm stomping out the door.
Yeah.
No, I think if you can flex, ministry's about flexing, ministry's about compromising. And
I was going to say, you can learn a lot through compromise and sometimes submitting, because maybe there's something that the senior leader's seeing that you're not seeing. I think sometimes we get into this, well, I'm right, he's wrong mentality, and we miss out on something that God was trying to teach us. I mean, I think biblically we have that model of, you know, with David and Saul. You know, David knew he was going to be king, but God said, it's not time yet. There's a lot you got to learn, and about leadership and about leading a team. And obviously he built that army for a reason. I think that was a leadership lesson for David. And so I think David had to figure that out. And if he had tried to jump ship too quick or take over, kill Saul while he was having his potty break, he would have missed out on some great leadership lessons.
That's so good. That is so right. We had our senior leader wanted us to do this Wednesday night program for a while. I thought it was a terrible idea. And I thought, you know what? He's the leader. He's the senior leader. He hasn't asked us to do much like this. He was right. I was wrong. It was so impactful. It worked fantastic. So I had to say, all right, I'm learning here. It's not like you go to college and you've got it. No, we should be continually learning all the way along. And even if you don't have, you know, agree with everything your senior leader does, you still learn so much from them. And even some of the ornery people you work on alongside of, you can still learn things from them too.
Right. Yep. So we know that one of the reasons that leaders leave is with the conflict. So if they don't, what would be some steps that they could do to try to resolve the conflict with the senior leader? What advice would you give somebody that says, I'm not sure how to approach my leader? What should I do?
That is an excellent question. Number one, the one thing I would regret was, especially early on in my ministry, I would wait a longer time to go in and have an honest heart-to-heart conversation with the senior leader. And you might say, well, I don't have that close of a relationship with them. I would book, you know, do it through the secretary, book a 30-minute with your senior leader, and I'd write it out. Here's the issue I'm facing. This is the different outcomes I see. And then wait, let them process that a little bit and come back with that. Biblically, that's what you do. You go to the person you have an issue with, and then if they don't listen, then you have one witness. Now that's harder with your senior leader. But how I've done that is I've said, hey, can I have the business administrator in here, because he knows about this as well, and I want him to give his input on this as well. And then for me, you know, the third step is taking it to the church, which I don't think is appropriate when it's a senior leader. But if you've met with them, eventually then you're going to have to leave. Mm-hmm. And putting things in writing also helps, because some senior leaders, they get in the zone. We have to remember, they're not just looking at the children's or youth portions of it. They're looking at the big picture, the whole entire thing. Their focus is scattered along so many things. So sometimes you have to be the squeaky wheel. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. So you have to keep talking about it, bringing it there in writing. I do monthly reports in writing for my senior leader. That's so important. It's in writing. You keep bringing it up. That can sometimes make change happen. Now, I do feel like I have to mention, there are situations which cross the line from just dysfunctional or a personality conflict where you just have different personalities, different leadership styles, into becoming verbally abusive. Mm-hmm. I've seen this myself, and I've every one of these conferences, I know that you and I have seen each other at, Pastor Tom, I run into leaders in the hallway that tell me stories that will set your hair on fire, just going, I cannot believe that this happened anywhere, much less a church.
Right.
You know, I can't believe them. But when put downs or passive aggressiveness, or it's starting to eat at your spirit, I mean, that can break your spirit. That'll drop somebody out of ministry faster than anything else. That'll destroy your health, destroy your home life. Yeah. Staying in there because you feel like, okay, I have to take the beating for this ministry. If somebody is in that position of leadership, the senior leader, and they've probably been doing that for a while, they're probably not going to change without an act of God. So I typically tell that leader, for the sake of your own health and your own marriage, it's okay to go.
Right.
It is okay to get yourself out of that position before it wrecks you physically and with depression. And when the smoke clears, your marriage is supposed to still be intact.
Right.
Churches come and churches go, but your marriage is supposed to still be there. I know that sounds harsh, but you want to make sure that you take care of yourself and your family as well.
Yeah.
And that may be saying, no, nobody deserves to be treated that way. Nobody deserves that. And you're not doing that leader a favor by training them that it's okay to treat you that way.
Right. Oh, I totally agree. I think you're spot on with that advice. And I've given that advice to some of the people that I've coached too. And well, I had to give it to myself because I stayed too long in a place. I worked for a very unhealthy leader, and I did take a lot of abuse, and I shouldn't have. And I should have gotten out a lot sooner. And I kept telling myself, well, I don't feel released yet. I don't know what more signs I needed than what I was getting already. To get out. And it was a huge, it was a scary move to get out, but I had no choice. And it was the right decision for me to get away and move on. So, well, let's turn the page to another area that often causes people to leave or get discouraged. And that's those unmet expectations. I've found that in the interview process, it's like dating. You're putting your best side forward. Both sides are making themselves, you know, look like they're all covered in glitter. And then when you get there, the industrial fans blow the glitter away, which I hate glitter. And that's another reason why I hate it, is because honestly, we're not being honest with each other sometimes, and it's scary. And I have heard stories, and I guess I've even experienced it myself, of almost feeling baited and switched. So unmet expectations can be huge, because then it can create these walls very early in a ministry, and it can be crippling. So what are some ways that you can start thinking through how to prevent this when it happens? And I want to hear from you. Why do you think that happens? But then what can be done to prevent it?
Oh, that is a huge, huge reason why so many people leave. Unrealistic expectations, unmet expectations. Expectations are key. And how they say perception is reality. And you get your reality turned on its head when it's not what you expected. Like, just like what you said, grass is always greener. So it is possible to jump out of the fire into the frying pan because you thought this looked so much better. And then you get in there and it's not at all what you thought it was going to be. So what I would say is you need to have some questions answered up front. ministry, this is harder because you don't want to leave what you're thinking. I don't want to leave one place and then have this big time space before I start at the other, financially speaking or on your resume. So we're in this hurry to find what God has for us next. And that hurry can lead us to walk right into a nightmare or just something that we're not a good fit for. For me, I remember that unrealistic expectations, I would be interviewing, I had to interview a lot of people for our open preschool position that we had. And I was interviewing, and this one lovely young lady, so sweet, she said, I said, why do you want to work at a church? Why do you want to work full time here at our church? She says, oh, I can't wait to work in a church. I thought that'd be so wonderful. Everybody's praying all day. Everybody says nice things to each other. And we just pray and encourage each other all day long. She said, I'm just so sick of the gossip at my job and that people say mean things to each other. And elementary coordinator, both of us, as soon as she left the room, we thought she would never make it. They would chew her up and spit her out. Those unrealistic expectations. Working in a church, you're still working with people.
Yeah.
The other staff are people, your senior leader, the parents. You are going to have conflict. And I mean, let's just be honest. I think the conflict is worse in the children's and family area because you're dealing with people's kids.
Right, right.
The conflict's going to be worse. You have to have a better ratio of volunteers to kids. So you have more potential there for a lot of conflict. I don't think we prepare people how to deal with that conflict well. And they go in thinking this is going to be so wonderfully spiritual, or they think, I'm just going to talk to the kids all the time. I don't want to have to deal with the adults. And then the realization sets in, oh, the biggest part of my job is administrative, putting people where they need to be, recruiting, training, communicating with parents, communicating with staff. So it's good to have a clear picture of what you're going to be doing before you say yes. It is not only appropriate, it is greatly encouraged. I'm greatly encouraging you to ask questions and get answers. I have a list of them on my blog before you say yes, because it is better to know up front. And one of the questions I always ask is, how many pastors have you gone through in the last 3 years?
Good question.
Yeah. Now, I was the 8th children's pastor in 8 years in Dayton. However, and that's a red flag, by the way. I wanted to work for the guy who I ended up working for there. He was just fantastic. And I wanted to work for him. And I knew God had called me there, but I still want to know what I'm walking into. I still want to know. And sometimes I will call the previous children's leaders and just ask. I may not agree with everything they say, but I want to know. I want to know what they have to say. I will ask questions like, how many office hours are required? Does Sunday and Wednesday night count for office hours? What is the vacation time like? What are your expectations about my spouse and my children? What other activities do you expect me to be doing? The reason I ask this is that whole section they have on most job descriptions, and other as assigned by the senior pastor.
Oh, that's always a good one.
Yeah. Ask questions. Get those questions answered before you say yes. And then I usually also, you got that short honeymoon period, and then the reality sets in. So I go there. They had to kick me out. So I thinking this is the perfect place. No, I think this is going to be tough, but God's called me to it. So I'm going to get through it.
Good. Good. Okay. Well, let's turn the page a little bit more, and let's think about the idea that one of the things that helps us stay in ministry longer is by continuing to learn and to grow our own leadership. I know I've found that if you want to grow your leadership influence, you need to be consistently and regularly learning yourself, growing in a lot of different areas. As a leader, what are some things that you do to grow your leadership?
Oh, such a great question. I do believe you have to continually be growing. You have to continually be learning. The next generations of children are changing so fast. So the kids that we have in our ministries right now are not the same as the kids that were in our ministry 10 years ago. It's changing. And if you don't change, your ministry is going to become irrelevant. So you have to be constantly learning and growing. I went back for my master's degree in children's and family ministries. I'm hoping, by the grace of God, I'm going to graduate this December. But I know that a lot of states have district trainings and certifications, licensing that you can go for. They have online things such as, you know, Kidmin Academy, things like that, that you can go for. But you do need to recognize some are accredited, some are not. So some churches would prefer you do stuff that is accredited that could transfer. What I'm doing is almost entirely online through Bethel, and it is accredited. So I would look into that. See what training is available even in your own town. I took grief training through the Baptist church in town. They were just offering it. So I got grief training certification, one of the best group of classes I've ever taken. I wish that that was mandatory for even undergrad in ministry. There's usually free trainings you can take. There's one coming up here near where I live about abuse and trauma with children that I think would be wonderful for kids pastors. Here's the thing. If you don't put it on your calendar, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Right.
So if you put it on your calendar, here's how I'm going to continue my training every year. And then you make it happen. I believe you got to invest in yourself, because as I said, the statistics show you probably won't be at that church for life. You probably won't be there. If you're one of the lucky few, that's great. You know, you're Brian Dollar, you get to be at yours for life. but most of children's pastors end up switching at some point. And if you have just poured everything you had into that one church without building yourself up, you got to look at, okay, what have I been doing to make myself a better minister, more effective minister? Mm-hmm. And you take what you've invested in yourself onto that next ministry.
Good stuff. Let me ask you, what's been one of the most challenging things that you've worked on for yourself? What's been a real challenge for you?
Oh, boy. I know most people would think I would say my books. I mean, those were a lot of work. I thought the biggest part would be the writing of them, that it would be getting them finished. I was so excited and elated when I had each book finished, but then the harder part was actually the editing portion, where the editor would send it back to me, which is a person. So I'm just going, I thought this was done. We'd have it to publishing in a week, and here it went months and months and months of editing, and that's just the way it goes. But I would say the hardest thing I've had to do as a leader has actually been more self-care, leading myself. Mm-hmm. I have no problem helping everybody else out and having compassion there, but start doing the martyr thing of, oh, well, I'll sacrifice myself so that all of you can. And I had to finally say, okay, I have to get myself healthy here. I was working way too many hours a week. Physically, I wasn't doing well. Just being honest here, I had a bad experience for a while with a pastor's wife who every time she saw me had to make a comment about my weight and how I dressed. And well, if you just take the stairs once in a while, you wouldn't have to worry about it. And she's, you know, skinny as a snake. I was working out daily and on Weight Watchers, but I had to address, okay, Trish, you're going to have to cut down the stress in your life, work fewer hours, get on a workout regimen that you enjoy, eat healthfully, take your days off, take your vacation time with your family. And I have been able to lose a lot of weight and get in a lot better shape now. I'm turning 40 this year, a lot better shape than I have been in over a decade. But I had to take that focus on me, mm-hmm. which isn't selfish. It's so that I can be in ministry for the long haul.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us leaders, we don't do that. I think it was John Acuff recently said, you know, what you do in your 30s prepares you for your 40s for your 50s for your 60s. And it, I mean, yeah, that's not like rocket science, but it was a very, yeah, because I turned the big 50 this year, and I've, yeah, believe it or not. I just tell people that's definitely age is definitely a number when it comes to me, but you do. And I found out the hard way myself of not taking care of myself and yeah, we do very easily, put ourselves in the wrong mentality. And I've said this, I've written about it. We've had different episodes where we've talked about, this area of self-care and how leaders don't do well, but which is strange because if we've modeled our leadership after Jesus, what did Jesus do often? He took time to rest. He went out to pray. You know, he wasn't with people 24/7. Yes. And I think sometimes we have to model that even for our leaders, for our volunteer team, so that we show them the right way to go. So that's good. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that. Cause that's an important thing. Let me ask you, what are some areas that you could encourage leaders, to study to help, their ministry potential? What are some areas or some things that need to be on a leader's radar screen?
Oh, if I could go back to my undergrad umpteen years ago, I would tell myself to go take those courses on grief and tragedy response much earlier. We did not have that in Bible college. I'll just tell you, I had actually taken my first position as a children's pastor when I was 17, almost 18. So I was very young. But this church knew me and I was having a blast doing puppets. And I was... little girl one Sunday morning to receive Christ. I still can see her face in my mind, Joyelle. And she'd been brought by her friends from school. And it was less than 24 hours later, she was getting a baseball out of the rain gutter and she fell off and she hit her head and she died. And The parents asked me to be at the funeral. And here I'm 17. I just prayed with this kid to receive Christ. And then there was the other end of it. I mean, I was shell-shocked. I think at the funeral, it was the largest funeral that the church had ever had. It was just packed. And trying to figure out what to say to these parents, these grieving parents. And then in kids' church that next Sunday, here's this solemn group of kids who just, their friend just died. So then I realized, okay, now there's ministry that has to happen to the kids in here. This is not fun and games. This is, we need some Jesus on tap right now. We need Jesus away. And I realized I had no training or preparation for this. And I wish I could say that was the last time something like that happened. But no, there have been so many instances since. Life happens. We've had kids from kids' church get killed in a car accident. We've had one of our leaders died of cancer. Over the years, many of these things have happened, and that grief and trauma training have been important. I would say learning about divorce care for kids would be great. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, I would say, this is a secular thing, it's called verbal judo, conflict management. I had to take it when I worked security at Mall of America. It was so vital in my ministry, believe it or not. Handling conflict well, the art of verbal judo. If you can get that book, that's a great book. Great training course to go through.
Good stuff. Verbal judo. I like that. Yeah, I've gone through the Peacemaker, Ken Sandy. And that is a fantastic resource for churches. They have a whole kit that you can take. In fact, I always tell pastors, senior leaders, this is something you need to take your leadership through, all of your main leaders, main volunteer leaders need to walk through this, and then it needs to become part of your church constitution, of how we will handle conflict, how we will manage it, the biblical process for it, and how it, you know, that if it has to, it leads to church discipline, which a lot of churches are scared to do nowadays. But it, and that's, you know, well, there's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, good one.
And we probably should do one on how to handle. I think there's more that we could talk about in that area. So I think that's good. Well, as we wrap up, I love asking this question of leaders. What's the best piece of advice that you've been given that you would share with another leader?
Oh, that is such a good question. Actually, that awesome boss I told you about in Dayton, he had had one of the largest youth groups in Chicago's history. So I wanted to work for him and kind of learn everything that I could there. And the most important piece of advice he ever gave me was stop making their emergency your emergency.
Ooh, good stuff.
Not everything that people says is an emergency is an emergency. I watched him. He was the master. You'd have somebody mad from Sunday morning. They're just furiously angry that somebody said her daughter pushed somebody. And she's yelling and saying, I demand to meet with you right now. And he's so smooth. Like he'd say, oh, we've got meetings today, which was true. I'd love to meet with you next Thursday. And she's, next Thursday? I can't. No, we are meeting. And whatever she suggested, he would say, oh, so sorry, that won't work. How about this day? And he didn't get ruffled. He didn't get riled. He just said, she says this is an emergency. I'm not missing time with my family tonight or losing sleep over this. He's like, she has to learn to handle her own emotions. I'm not responsible for her emotions. She's responsible to handle her emotions. And if she learns she can control you by getting all upset and calling every board member and anybody, then she'll always control you. And he said, I want you to watch what happens when she walks in here next Thursday. And I, in my mind, I'm thinking she's going to be exploding and angry because you made her wait 8 days. Nope. She walked in the door. She'd had time to think about it and calm down. She apologized to him for overreacting because she found out her daughter had pushed somebody. And he said, Trish, if I had engaged with her when she was that angry, I will just escalate the situation.
Yeah.
So he said, if somebody's that upset, you need to assess, okay, is this a life-threatening emergency? If not, schedule a time to meet about it and make sure they're not saying that you're jumping when they say jump. Because he said, that's not helping that person either. You're teaching them how to use manipulative emotional behavior to control. And as pastors, we have to lead people to be more Christ-like and more godly. And this is a teaching moment. That just revolutionized my life, because if somebody was offended, I was running myself ragged trying to make them happy again.
Right.
This changed my entire schedule. I realized, oh my goodness, I'm in control of me. They're in control of them. I've got to do what God has for me to do and what the senior leader has for me to do. I don't have to make everybody happy. And it was very freeing for me. Very freeing. And once they calmed down, well, I would say 99% of the time that took care of most of the conflict right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great advice. Okay. So we've had some good stuff shared with you from you today. If I know that there's going to be people going, hey, I'd love to chat with Trisha a little bit more. So tell us how we can get in touch with us, and then tell people about your books. Because I would love for them to get their hands on them.
Oh, wonderful. I wrote two books, Your Children's Ministry from Scratch and Your Children's Ministry Beyond Basics, both available on Amazon. They are all about your kids' ministry. The first one is the basics, picking a curriculum, writing your first budget, recruiting, how to recruit, how not to recruit, that it's packed with ideas on recruiting your volunteer team, how you set up a kids ministry service that will last. We went from 300 to 600 kids in 9 months, and I put a lot of those principles in there of what worked for us, what didn't work for us. I had been a recruiter from All of America Security for 5 years, so I used those same recruitment techniques when I was recruiting for Kids Church, and I wrote down what worked and what didn't work. Now, both books have become textbooks at several colleges, North Central University, Valley Forge, several others. So they are now in 9 countries. I still now and teach out of the books. I do training events, conferences. I go to churches and speak, usually about once a month. I'm out of state teaching, and I do coaching as well. So if they're interested in personal coaching, I love doing that as well. I have a couple openings left, but I love doing coaching. Now, the third book I'm still working on, by God's grace, it'll be released this spring. There's a lot of interest in this one, even more than the first two. It's on why leaders quit and how you and your team can go the distance. It's about being in the ministry for the long haul. And it's very realistic, raw about here's the things that can happen in the ministry. Let's just be honest about it. We want you to be in ministry for the long haul and not be. So that book, because it's not just children's ministry specific, it's across the board, any type of ministry, even if you're a key leader, key volunteer in ministry or full-time or part-time, that's why there's been a lot of interest in it. I've had people say, well, I thought I was the only one that was having this conflict in the ministry. I thought I was the only one working so many hours, or I didn't know it was going to be like this. So I wanted to write a book to encourage leaders that you're not alone, and here's some practical things you can do right now to be in the ministry for the long haul.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks for so much for being on the episode. And again, if you are struggling, if you're a leader that needs some encouragement, touch base with Tricia, or get in touch with me, PT Bump on pretty much social media there. Also, you can go to tombump.com. And if you're looking for coaching or would like to be a part of a mastermind group, I've got one that's going to be starting in October of 2017. Okay. If you're interested in being a part of that, you can dive in as part of the Kid Ministry Collective thing that we're doing. Otherwise, we'll look forward to another episode of the KMC podcast real soon. Thanks for listening.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.